Welcome to the Coach Haas Podcast, powered by Sports Rehab PA, along with our sponsors.
By Optimizers Masszymes, 100% plant-based, naturally derived, best digestive enzyme blend out there right now. Highly concentrated with enzymes that digest proteins, starches, sugars, fibers, and fats. Helps to relieve indigestion, gas, bloating, and fatigue after meals. Take it with the meals to enhance the digestion and nutrient absorption. Also helps to improve recovery after hard exercise and hard efforts. So go to buyoptimizers.com and use code JUICY for 10% off.
Okay, welcome to another episode of the Coach Haas Podcast. Friday afternoon, Mike, we found a really cool guest. I've had a couple different conversations with her. I guess we met through either a TikTok or LinkedIn or something. Actually, it might have been from the parents of the ACL page.
I think it was
because there's a lot more PTs have been popping up on there, giving their different versions. Very interesting because Kate is mainly remote. So I'm really interested in how she's doing that. You know, obviously we have an online program that we do, but I'm always intrigued by this. And what's interesting, and, you know, as we get into the conversation here, we can get a little bit more into this. But I am curious because there are a lot more PTs now on that ACL page, which makes sense. But a lot of them are knocking other PTs. So it's like we're knocking the and I have two PTs in front of me right now. You know, we're knocking the field, so to speak, because we're seeing the retail rates so high. And yet we're still trying to find these forward thinking PTs, and we're doing a really good job of finding them. It's now we just got to make sure that we're the PTs or you guys are the PTs and the strength coaches are aligning the right way so that we can really get the results for these kids, these athletes, these adults, you know, get them the better results so we can kind of see if we can lower that rate a little bit. But anyway, Kate is going to entertain us here today. She does the, let me get this right. She started the Helios. Am I saying that right? Helios?
Helios. ACL.
Helios. Helios
ACL Whatever.
Project. Yeah.
I got it right here.
And she's going to talk about that. And then obviously, again, talk about what she's doing as far as a PT working with these ACLs remotely. So again, Kate, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here. So yeah. And just to kind of hit on your point, like I think if you follow me on TikTok or Instagram, any of the many places that I might pop up, like I do often talk about traditional PT as kind of like in a more negative light, just because of the fact that, you know, due to the system of care itself, it's failing a lot of ACLers. I don't know if you guys prefer the term ACL athletes, ACLers, people going through ACL injury, what have you, in many different ways. And, you know, not all that falls on the physical therapist themselves. Like some of that is the system of insurance, if you're in the insurance system, that's a big factor, I think, because people just don't get enough care and thorough care. And I feel like that's where the ball gets dropped. So like if in this conversation, anything sounds like I'm being a little bit of a hater, I don't mean it. I'm just trying to communicate, you know, a better way to move forward with care. And I think, you know, in-network PTs there are some amazing ones. So it's not like an us versus them thing. It's that we're Correct. All trying to come together and make care better for everyone. So hopefully we can see people living more full athletic lives and that retail rate coming down.
Absolutely. So, and again, Mike does it, you know, Mike is obviously, you know, a doctor of physical therapy and he doesn't necessarily bash them, but you know, it's just a matter of, you know, step up, you know, like we're in this field for a reason. And so if the epidemic is an epidemic, which is interesting because it's almost like an epidemic inside of an epidemic, Nick, right? It's the retail rate inside of the ACL tear. So like, and it's two things that are really not being addressed other than, you know, again, it's like buying the car. Like, oh, nobody has the car that I bought. Now all of a sudden you buy that car, you see it all the time. So now what I'm seeing is a lot more, you know, obviously the PTs that are speaking the language that we want to speak. So that's what intrigues us about bringing on other PTs to kind of talk about that. One of the goals of the content that you put out is to change the mindset of the athletes and the parents, pushing them back to be, you know, sometimes faster, coming back, you know, more resilient. Let's kind of dive into the ACL tear epidemic and why is that occurring? Why outcomes for the post-surgical are still poor? Well, before you get into that, Kate, let's just get a little bit of your background so people can understand what your background is in this before we kind of dive into the tear epidemic.
Okay, fair. Because that was going to be a deep dive, my friend. So let's right. back it up a second. So yep. I started the Helios ACL project. Now, just like a little bit of the where does Helios come from? Isn't that like a Greek word? So like Helios is the Greek god that pulls the sun up every morning. So like immediately off the jump, I want to instill in ACL athletes a sense of ownership over their situation and that by working with me, they are going to be pulling their own sun up and, you know, creating a brighter future for
I like that.
Right.
That's, so, yeah. That's very deep.
Creative. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I like
mean,
that.
you gotta have the imagery too. So like, okay, that's pretty vague, Kate. What does that mean? So I am a physical therapist. I'm also a strength and conditioning specialist because I felt like being a PT isn't enough, right? I wanted to broaden the horizons of, you know, my ability to apply strength and conditioning principles to people. And in like PT school, they just, you don't get a lot of that, which is like shocking. And being an athlete myself, I was a collegiate athlete. I did rowing at University of Delaware. I had dabbled with some experience in the weight room and I was like, okay, so I can draw from that experience, but I don't have enough to get ACL athletes to where they need to be. So that's kind of how I got into the strength and conditioning space as well. And I found that incredibly useful, even like with non-athletes too, just gives you a deeper understanding. And then as far as, you know, going the virtual route, I actually, it was never my plan to go virtual. It wasn't even on my radar. I had wanted to start something. I was going to call it like ACL Club or something like local. Now I'm from Long Island, New York, which has a very, very high prevalence. It's a very sporty community, right? So you got a lot of lacrosse, a lot of travel soccer. So like athletics were always a big part of my life. And I, you know, personally, I have cystic fibrosis. So it was a way for me to stay healthy, something I love to do. So then when I became a physical therapist, you know, obviously I resonated a lot with what ACL athletes were going through where, you know, they were out of their sport for, you know, up to 12 months or more. And I was like, I've been through that so many times due to my illness. And I really resonated with their journey. And then on top of it, everyone was re-tearing. And I was like, why is this happening? I guess this is just a really hard injury to come back from. And, you know, as I involved myself in the research more and really started to get a grasp of like what better care can look like, I was like, wow, we are so far from where we need to be. So I was molding this idea and then 2020 comes along and then there's like big burst of the online space. And I said, you know, I think this could be a concept that I can actually bring to more people, which prompted me to start working with ACLers virtually. So like in the capacity, and if you have questions, I'm a blabbermouth, so just interrupt me.
Yep, but, yep.
So there's many different capacities in which I assist ACLers. So some people, we do strength and conditioning on top of their in-person PT. Some people, you know, depending on where they are license-wise, we're doing their full rehab virtually, which has been kind of interesting. Because at first I was like, is that even going to work? And then I was like, it definitely does work. So it's been really awesome because I'm no longer constricted by timelines or sessions. Like if I want to give someone 7 days a week of stuff, I have the ability to now. Not that that's necessarily indicated for everyone, but you get the idea. Right. We're kind of breaking free of the constraints of the traditional medical system. Not that it's bad, just that it has constraints.
Right.
To give a more comprehensive plan of care and one that goes for as long as they need it. Like I still sometimes am working with people after they return to sport doing their like in-season strengthening and conditioning just to make sure they stay as strong as possible. So that's kind of like, long story short, how I got to where I am. And it's been a really awesome journey. I have loved every minute of it, truthfully.
It's
Incredible.
awesome.
It's awesome. It's the type of people we're looking for, Joe. This is what we were trying to build out here.
Exactly.
I had a candidate actually come to the clinic a little bit earlier, actually doing his internship was at Petroski. And this individual likes he does like mixed martial arts and football and just a good mindset, and just we just talked about a lot of that stuff and wanted him to come see the clinic. He's got to go look at a couple different clinics and see, environment, what he likes. But, we talked about a lot of that stuff as to coming out as, when you're a new grad is in, coming out of PT school. And then also when you're a student, some of the things that you think you're going to be doing and what you think the landscape looks like as a student, and you get out and it's not like that. And it's interesting because, Ivy Rehab does residencies and all these partnerships and stuff. We try to do a lot of these things with taking on students. Like I have two students sign up this summer. And when we had a discussion with our business partner, one of our business partners last summer, we asked, new grads come out and they're not very prepared for really what has to go on in the clinic. And we had our company had expressed that to a lot of the schools that we do, fellowships and internships with and take students from. And they're like, that's not really our job to teach them that. It's your job. Like the schools just get them like this base level knowledge. And it's almost like you just see like this big disconnect between academia and like what the real world's like. And you can say that in a lot of professions, but it's really scary how it stems over into our profession, because when you talk about PT failing, it's I think a lot of that, because PTs get stuck sometimes in what they've learned from like year one, and they stick with it because it's comfortable, and that's the biggest problem. So I don't think I think it has to be spoken about. I mean, there's a difference between coming out and saying a competitor sucks and this and that and bad mouthing, or just being like, look, they're doing outdated stuff. It is what it is. Like you have to keep up with the times. You have to look at what you're doing. And unfortunately, a lot of places and PTs are just going through the motions. And I don't even really need to say that. Our patients are saying that.
Right.
So I think for a while there was a time frame where people didn't really know the difference. But now people are really learning the difference. People know when they're feeling good and they're getting better and they're making progress. Whether it's an 89-year-old or it's a 15-year-old, they know how they feel and they know like what's going on. And not everyone is really just out to lunch. People really aren't stupid. They could figure it out, So when they go to these places and they're just doing the same thing, or they're not getting to where they want, they're still having pain, or their knee is still swollen, eventually people start asking questions. And then now with social media, parents of the ACL group or things they're seeing all over, people can ask questions and say, is this normal? Should I be here? And then all of a sudden some people start saying, no, it should be this, should be that. Now you start questioning. And Joe and I have run into situations where we have had, athletes come from other clinics to come work with us, and the therapist at that previous clinic would get mad when the parent would ask questions on to why you're doing or what's going on, or if the athlete was frustrated, the therapist would be very closed off and be like, this is what you just need to do on the DPD, trust me. And I'm just like, oh man, this is fun. So I love when the parents come in, and I love educating them on stuff. I actually get annoyed when we have an athlete dropped off and the parent is nowhere to be involved. We've had a case like that. I'm like, how do you not want to know what your son or daughter is doing? Or even if you're like paying out of pocket for this, like, don't you want to know where your money's going to? And it's one thing when you do the education and then they drop them off and they're trusting you, and then they check in again, how's it going, what's going on? But some of these parents are just, they're not even involved in like in their kids' care. So yeah, I mean, I think all this stuff you're doing, Kate, speaking out about it and trying to make a change is really what's need to be done, because that's the mission Joe and I are on. Because think about someday if this is your kid and you had your 15, 16-year-old kid in a clinic doing stuff, and it's like, we're 6 months into this and they still can't do basic things. And you're like, what are we wasting our time doing here? Like, come on. So that's really the mission we're on too. It's just awesome.
Kate, when do you typically when are you typically seeing these athletes? At what time or what phase of the care do you see these? I mean, obviously, you probably see them at different levels, but what is it with online? Because I want to really, you know, dive into this, just obviously, you know, from my own self-understanding, because it can be frustrating. I've had, you know, a good handful, you know, or two of ACL athletes online. And it seems to be, you know, some are consistent and they've gotten to where they need to be. And then there's that handoff point still. So what is the time frame that you're usually seeing these athletes?
Fantastic question. So there's a couple different like types of people I see. I kind of classify them in like different buckets. So I have mm-hmm. some people that come to me after their PTNs and they're like, hey, I can't do my sport the way I want to. It just doesn't feel right. And usually it has to do with some strength performance deficit type stuff. We're working more kind of like traditional training would, obviously with some ACL flare on there. And then I have people that have got hurt, heard how bad it is, and they say, hey, can you just like make sure what I'm doing is right? So kind of like being a partner with their physical therapist. And then I have, unfortunately, the growing number of people that I like to term like knee rescue cases, honestly, because they're getting such bad care in other places that they're coming to me 12 weeks out looking like they're 2 weeks out. So that's the bucket that I did not see coming. I thought this was going to be all bridge program, honestly.
Right.
But the more content I put out there, people are more aware when they're not getting great care. So I think that everyone that is finding me is seeking me out. So that's one piece that leads to increased compliance. Now, when it comes to compliance, like there's so many different factors, right? So like before anyone joins on the program, we are sitting in a call for 45 minutes and I am asking them in 19 different ways, why does this matter to you? What are you going to let stuff stop you from getting there? So some of that like motivational interviewing type stuff, I want to uncover like, if this doesn't matter to you and you're not going to be compliant, then I'm not a great fit and that's okay. Let me try to connect you with someone who is. So then that kind of filters out people that aren't that into it. Now, at all points in the journey, like we're all human beings, right? Motivation might fluctuate a little bit. So that's kind of where the coaching piece of this is. Cause I don't know if you guys have seen, but like I do call myself an ACL coach. I'm not marketing myself as a physical therapist to these people. And it's to me a term of like, we're going to do way more than what PT and training is. We're going to actually work on the behavior change pieces of this too. And, you know, I would say the population is very motivated for the most part. So those coaching conversations usually are just like, hey, I see you're going off track a little bit before you fully fall off the track. Let's get back on there. I am very on top of my people. But it is true that like, it is not for everyone, right? Some people aren't going to do the stuff. And you know what? That's okay. There's a fit that would work for them. But I think because I'm so heavy on like the ownership piece of this, like it's not your fault it happened, but it is your absolute responsibility to get your life back. Right. And having that be like a pillar of how I work in the program, I think that does help people. I haven't had anyone fall off the face of the earth without at least having a conversation. And then if we decide that we're not a good fit, I'm like, not a problem. Let's find someone who is. So to me, it's about understanding who I'm working with and like getting to have a relationship with them. So that way, when they are faltering, I can kind of pull them back on to where they should be. That's a little bit of a tangent, but does that like fully answer?
That makes sense. That makes sense. The other thing that I, you know, that I'm curious about is, you know, Mike and I, since being together, have really found some interesting technology that has really helped us create objective data to show these parents, to show these athletes. The QuickBoard literally shows you from one set to the next set, whether you're doing better or not. So these athletes can really get a real-time feedback on what's going on. The challenge that I have now being in Florida and not being in PA with Mike is I still have all that, you know, that technology to do the testing. So when I have these athletes come in person, I now have a an app that I use from this company called Demo to You. And it actually has markers come up on your joint lines so that when you're doing different movements, it can measure that. And I can obviously have eyeballs on there. It's still frustrating to me, right? Because it's still, I want to get my hands and I want to kind of come through the screen and be like, now, like, let's kind of do this. So they're kind of my frustrations. How are you able to test these athletes and know when they're ready for that next step? For instance, like that athlete that when we know when they're ready for agility, if you're working with them online, yeah. And when are they ready to return to, you know, that next phase? But like agility is a big one, right? Like we get that all the time, right, Mike? You know, when can I do this? When can I do the hurdles? Yeah. Or when can I start to cut? And when can I start to pivot? Yeah. You know, and that really, I think we really lean a lot into the quick board for that information, because it's really showing the patient and us, can they actually move in that stationary position, one foot being still, another foot moving, you know, and then both feet moving, recognizing things. So to me, that became such a big piece. Again, going back to my question, how are you able to assess that athlete moving into that next phase online?
Yeah. So in truth, like the one downfall that I have found is that it's harder to be accurate. And like, I am totally upfront about that to athletes and people I work with. Like, and if I could send everyone a quick board, I absolutely would. So I would actually love to hear a little bit more about that too, because I just find that really cool that the neurocognitive piece can be tested in that way. But so for me, and this is, we'll speak about this in the context of maybe one of those like bridge people. In general, it all applies to. So like for me, I go off of strength data as much as possible because it is both reliable and consistent when we test and retest. So like that might look like some different things at different stages. Obviously, I'm not having someone 4 weeks out do isokinetic testing, right? It depends where they are in their process. But so using strength data, using I have them videotape certain movements. So like if we're gearing up toward, for example, like return to running, and I clear them on the strength testing data, I'm going to have them do a functional assessment of all their different joints. So like, that's going to be a combination of like things like anterior step down, side planks, all structured in like a stepwise way so that they're doing it as they're fatigued. And then I have them go back to a quad based exercise, like more anterior step downs. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. But I'm trying to see how they behave when they're fatigued. And then the cool thing about it being virtual is I can look at that in slow motion and see like, okay, is there anything visually I could see that's a red flag?
Right.
That means they're going to fail the test. So like, is it as accurate as something like the quick board? No, it's not. But at least I'm looking at this stuff and trying to create something more comprehensive than they get traditionally. And then when it comes to like, actually, once they start to do agility stuff and do maybe some like slower speed sprinting, working on deceleration, that sort of thing, I'm also going to be analyzing qualitatively, how does it look while they're doing that? Because they're going to be videotaping at least one or two sets of what they're doing. This also is really important to have a relationship with the person, because you got to know who you can trust to like back and follow directions. So that's definitely even a bigger challenge than analyzing objective data is wrangling people in. But that's just a human problem always. Now when it comes to like gearing up for like return to sport, I'm going to be looking at the same things you guys are going to be looking at. So like if I can get them into an isokinetic testing center, like I will have them go do that. Most people I am able to connect with some form of in-person testing. It just depends on where they live. Like I have people in the UK that they're they're not getting to an in-person testing. So in those situations, like, I'm forced to use, like, okay, let's look at, like, your 5 rep max on the knee extension machine, hamstring curl machine, and leg press. Like, it's not ideal, but we're creating some numbers that reflect their
impact. Yep. You need something to measure so that you can manage it.
Yes. And, like, what I love if I could fly everyone into, like, a center like yours in Tampa, like, hell yeah, I would, but it's not in the budget.
Well, we're gonna be doing that at some point. We're going to be flying them in. We're going to be treating them. And then you and Mike can come down, and we'll have a nice little location right here.
Margarita? It'll be perfect.
Yeah. Well, we can have them. The patients cannot.
Absolutely. Well, maybe after their testing, depending on
after the test.
Anyway.
Mike, go into a little bit of telling Kate about the quick board and some of the testing that we're doing. You just had the quick board guys come in yesterday.
Yeah, Kate, I'll connect you with Kevin. You're on Instagram.
Yeah, I'm on Instagram, Helios ACL Project.
All right. Yeah, I was gonna say, because usually at the end of the show we wrap it up and find out where we could find everybody, so I could send you that and put you in touch, and you could talk to them about it. I think that there's obviously challenges with doing stuff only virtual, but I will say this, that the fact that you are intently watching the way somebody moves is probably more than they're getting in some of these clinics, because a lot of these clinics it's high volume, or they just had them going through the motion. I call it, like, Joe and I joke around, these like packages. It's like they're like basic ACL package built out, or like the premium package that they add like ladder drills and then like a leg press or something. I don't know, but it's the same nonsense stuff, because it's like PTs don't know what to do with ACL. So they just do this stuff because it's like, oh, sport specific. I used to joke and say that I think sometimes sports performance, they call it like that clinic. It's like, oh, I stood on a BOSU and I jumped around a little bit, and I'm like, they do things that, that sounds sports performance, but it's not. So they're going through the motions and they're doing stuff. And yes, there's a lot that with the sensor testing and stuff we do, there's things you're picking up the eyes can't see. But with a lot of this age group, there's stuff that you clearly can see. It's just the objective measure is a really good way of showing progress. And then when they start getting better, seeing those small inclinations. But if you could pick up on those movements and you learn how to analyze movements, you're going to kind of see where their deviations are. So, you still can understand what they're doing. So, they're always doing lumbar extension as a compensation, and it's really, really bad when you first work with them and they start giving interventions and they do stuff and it gets better. Yeah, you can't objectify without sensors. Do they start getting a little bit of that when they get fatigued? Like, do they still do it? But that's a compensatory technique. So as long as they learn that they need to be aware of that, that's more than them just being in the corner doing just stuff. Because a lot of athletes and a lot of what you see on social media is doing exercises and doing it wrong. We actually just saw, we always like to do a F Friday fitness move. And every Thursday, I feel like social media drops some stupid effed up exercise that influencers love to put up. And I share it with my team in here. And last night it was, I'm not going to obviously say who posted it, but it was a guy with back racked with, I guess, 135 pounds on his back. And he was doing like double leg jumps up a hill with it on his back. And I was like, all right. So I shared that to everybody, and like my coworker Bob's like, he's like, you're testing the limits of the lumbar discs and all this other stuff. And the reality is like, yeah, there's just a lot of stuff out there. And if you are looking at someone moving, you're looking at it in slow motion, you could still see a lot of those deviations and give them feedback. So yes, they're not perfect, but it's still better than people going into facilities and not having any awareness of what they're doing. Or, oh, I didn't even know my hips do that. And learning to focus on these things. And then, with the quick board, it comes into that. We did an updated demo yesterday. I've been using it since 2021, but they're launching a new app, and partly because we've been working with them on a better protocol. Like, where would you start somebody when they're first cleared for like weight bearing, or if there's a meniscus involved, or like, they are just ACL and they're starting to move. When would you get them on the quick board? How do you start with just very basic weight shifting to some double leg react drills, to a single leg, but you're reacting, but you're still touching down. So it's like a single leg, touch assist, to just completely standing on one leg, reacting to stuff. There's a lot of different progressions, but the purpose of it is it's external feedback. It's I'm focusing on something else and learning the feel for control in my body. But we're also doing that training here in the clinic. We do a lot of internal mapping. So getting people to understand how to control their bodies first. So if I put someone on the quick board and they're doing a single leg tap drill and they're all over the place, they're not ready for that drill. Yeah, they could get the touches and hit it, but they're doing survival mode to do it. I want you to be able to hold this good single leg stability, your pelvis and your torso, and hit those dots of reaction without being all over the place. You know, so now you're getting the internal mapping and the external mapping, and it's really cool because you get objective measures. So you could do anything from that all the way up to everyone loves the foot fire. It's like chopping your feet as fast as you can. How many touches can you get? It's like the bench press of the quick board. It drives the kids nuts in here because they want to get better all the time. And I'm like, it's like max squatting every day. I'm like, guys, you're getting a stimulus, but you're not going to crush your score every time you come in. You know, so there's a lot of cool stuff on it. A lot of agility stuff, you know, crossovers, switch moves. And you know, you would do that stuff with an athlete in a ladder or things like that in open space, which is cool. You'll still do that for spatial awareness and open concept or like kind of real world stuff, you know, like passing a ball and stuff. But the quick board will actually give them feedback as to how well they're touching. So you could use the quick board, see how well they're touching. Are they favoring one leg? Are they doing this or that? And then when you do the ladder drills, make them aware of that. So now they're not just doing those type of drills just blindly, but they're actually aware of how they're moving and how they're touching. And it's just good objective feedback so they could see. They could see like the difference. It's engaging. The other last thing is you can take the iPad out and have open space reaction. It'll do different things where the arrow will change and they have to do responses to that. So you could do a lot of creative things with that. Non-contact, contact, catches, things
You
like
can even
that.
add in your own drills and start getting creative and adding in
Yeah,
your own.
yeah. So it is cool. So it is,
I do
yeah.
incorporate. I don't know if you guys, it's gonna, the name of the app is escaping my mind right now, but it basically flashes different color lights. So like I will combine, like although this is for people that are willing to go the extra mile, like I will have them download the app, understand what they're supposed to do from an agility standpoint, and
And
incorporate.
listen, at the end of the day, like it, you know, if they want to get better and you're giving them suggestions to do things and it's, you know, going on to this app or going on, and they're not doing it, I mean, well, then, hey, they're wasting their money with you because these are the things that you want them to get done and they're not doing it. So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you hope that, you know, 100% of your patients are going to, you know, believe and do what you ask them. I mean, Mike and I have a list of things as home equipment that they get instantly as soon as they want to do something online. It's less than $100 for what we send them. It's
It's
like toe
amazing what
spacers.
a VersaLoop will do, how a yellow rubber band will blow people up. They are sweating and burning in all over the places, their ass, their glutes, like their groin. I'm like, this is a yellow band made in a factory someplace. And you want to talk about high level performance? Like, let's own this yellow band first, you know? That's amazing. So don't
So we
talk
give
to me
like, you know, like
about
a
high
handful of
level.
things. It's like maybe five or six things. What do we have? The bands, the mini bands,
The
the toe
FMT band, yeah, the
spacers,
toe
the
spacers, yeah.
FMT
Lacrosse
band,
ball, yeah.
and the lacrosse ball.
You
So
can do
it's
a
like,
lot with a little if you have the right expert.
exactly,
Yeah.
exactly. And again, when you're dealing with them online, you know, much more difficult to do. And the reason why we are in that space is because there's a need, right? We went into that space because we see that there's bad care. We see that there's a space missing there. So we're trying to jump in there and really kind of help solve that problem that's going on. What are you doing as far as how are you progressing someone through plyometrics?
The same way I would if I was in a clinic, right? So we're starting with assisted double jumping, probably more of like a pogo hop situation, progressing to a little bit of deeper range of motion, then single leg, then working on, you know, some more advanced stuff when they're ready, box jumps, depth jumps. But as far as like, do you mean like how do I decide when someone's ready or just like in general?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, the two-part question, really, how are you deciding that, right? Well, that becomes obviously your testing and you when you're seeing them. Are you doing it virtual with them or are you giving them a program and they shoot videos for you?
So it is asynchronous. Now, I'll make it smaller words. So just for people watching. So the program is not me sitting on Zoom with you, right?
Okay.
I use an app. It's a like programming app.
Yep.
Like a personal training app, honestly.
Yep.
So once we get your form right, and those are things you're videotaping to me. So like in the app, I'll start from the top. In the app, there is a video and there is written instructions for every single exercise that I write in that are personal to you. Some of the videos are me. Some of them are people on the internet that just taught things better than me and I don't have time to make a YouTube video. So in each of those situations, I'm going to tell you how I want you to videotape it and so on and so forth. Now, like, it would be very unrealistic to have people videotape every single exercise every single time. So it's not usually how it goes. I tend, when I'm progressing people, to do it. And like, this is kind of a downside, kind of an upside. Like, I do much more like part practice than you would typically do if you were in person, because you could just correct it right then. So like,
right.
I'm going to have someone, let's say if I'm having them do like initiate hopping, we're going to do one type of hop. I'm going to watch it and then clear for the next one. Right. Where typically if you're in a clinic, you're like, okay, that looks good. Now let's try this.
That's true. Exactly. Right. Right.
A much slower progression. And you're looking like a week to week basis, but overall, like they're going to end up in the same spot. And honestly, sure. It's a lot less tissue irritation because it's so stepwise.
Right. 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 Sometimes like, oh my God, how many times have we seen it, Mike, where we've heard, you know, one of our patients that we had a couple of years ago, you know, she was seeing a separate PT. I kept trying to convince the mom to go to Mike. And she would come into my sessions and say, well, my PT said, just kind of work through the pain.
Yeah, I remember that. I've got,
like, wait a second. Yeah, like, no. That's
in what way? Like, what do you mean?
Like, she had anterior pain consistently in step downs, in hopping, in jumping, and they were trying to progress her to do these things and get her back to running. And I kept dialing it back and saying, you're not ready to run yet. And then she would go and run at her practices or when she wasn't with me, or go run on the treadmill with this PT, to the point where I had to get on the phone with them and saying, listen, like, one of us has got to be able to tell her, you know, that this is right and this is wrong, you know, because now the mom is getting involved and she's confused. Well, this is what the PT is saying and you're saying this, and I'm a strength coach, and like, technically his degree was higher, and like, okay, that's great. Your degree may be four times higher than mine, but your common sense isn't even close to mine. So when there's pain, we're not going to work through it. We're going to work on maybe some mobility or maybe some soft tissue work to see, and then go back and try that exercise again. But if we're still having pain, then clearly we need something. And so that's kind of where I was like, I wasn't getting that cooperation from the PT. Eventually we were able to get her to see Mike. Mike was able to clean up some of the things. It ended up being, I think, something in her hamstring, right, Mike, that was really jamming her up, that he was able to get in there and manually be able to do that. Things that I can't do, he did. We were in the same clinic at that time, in the same training facility. So she literally walked down the hallway and, you know, she was able to get back and work with me. So again, advantages, disadvantages to things, but I like what you're saying is, okay, sometimes it might be a little bit slower in the progression, you know, in the micro, but in the macro, we're still getting that athlete to the same spot without it. Again, that harmful pain that they're having, you know.
And the problem is that with a lot of that stuff, you know, it's because they're doing something their body's not ready to do and their muscles aren't operating. A lot of stuff I've actually been learning from working with Bob in here is, you know, there's just dysfunction in these other muscles and they're trying to do these things and these other muscles are trying to take part or they're not functioning properly. So you get these soft tissue restrictions. So if you just clean up this foundational stuff first, you won't get a lot of that. So when a PT says just work due to pain, that's because the PT doesn't have the knowledge or the skill to fix it. So they're saying just try to figure it out. That's not skilled PT. That's not doctorate level. That's garbage. You know, right. And I'm not scared to tell a parent or an athlete or call the PT up and tell it to themselves. I don't give a shit. Like, this is not, You know, like life is too short for this stuff. Like, if that was your daughter and a PT said, just work through the pain, I'd be down in that clinic so fast with a folding chair. It wouldn't be fun. It'd be like WWE PT clinic. Like,
Oh
it's
yeah.
just, this is not acceptable. And like, that's what gives our profession a bad name. That's the type of shit that pisses me off, because you work hard to become a doctor or something, and we have that? No. So, you know, I get fired up about that stuff because it's laziness. And this is why, you know, insurance companies don't value what we do. We're scraping at the bottom for reimbursement rates. And then when we want to charge cash based, people, I tried PT and it failed. Well, that's why. So this is why we're trying to speak out against this, which is why, I mean, Kate, do you see anybody in person at all?
Not anymore. I am fully virtual. I locally, I have some people that initially started with me when I was still in person, in like a traditional clinic, that I still will like do some like testing and workouts with, but this just is like, it's fun for me. But the majority of my people are online at this point and will be going forward. Being said, like I do have access to some like isokinetic testing center over here, so I have been like testing people more often just because of
Oh,
that.
so you don't even really need that. I mean, the stuff that I've learned over the past years is, you know, if you get people to reduce their compensatory techniques and really isolate what those muscles are doing, you'd be surprised how weak people are. So when they're doing that isokinetic testing, you know, they're compensating to do the force anyway, especially when they're sitting in a slouch position, kicking their knee out. They're using all sorts of compensatory factors. And it's like that's a lot of that stuff is becoming outdated. And we've talked about a lot of that on multiple podcasts and multiple specialists. It's really the biomechanics. So your virtual assessment of somebody is going to be more helpful for these people than an isokinetic, to be honest, you know, because you have really strong athletes and they still tear their ACL because they don't know how to move. They don't know how to move under fatigue. So those two things are doing there, I think, are a lot more powerful. But if you ever did want to start, because you never know, people might really like you and they will be willing to fly out. I mean, when you start creating a name for yourself and a reputation, you'd be surprised. People will fly out and come and see you and they'll travel, especially people that have these kids that are high level or they want to go on to a scholarship. They'll pay the money to come see you. And if you have some tools that you could do hands-on to assess and do some things, you'd be surprised. Even if at some point you did invest in a quick board, or I don't know, maybe you did a seminar with me, Joe, and Bob or something, and we could show you the column core system we're doing and teach you some hands-on techniques on how to assess a lot of these kids' hip flexors, dorsiflexion, hamstring, and glutes. You'd be like, yeah, you can't even do a Biodex testing because it doesn't matter. You can't even hold your leg up properly without using your back. And starting with that, and then again, blowing them up with a miniband. Why don't you own this green miniband first before you start doing weights, you know? And then there's other things you could do too. Like if you got, I don't know, do you use BFR at all? Well, you're not probably because you're not in person, but if you were.
Some athletes I work with do use BFR, but like that's their choice because expensive. That there's the like less the cheaper versions, which like don't work as well. That's
Well,
a
we could
little
introduce you to our friend Trent, and you could get Rock Cuff certified, and you could use the Rock Cuffs, which are portable. I mean, I train with them, it's a whole thing. Athletes can buy themselves a pair, they're over the counter, and you could literally teach them how to use it. No one's leg has ever gone blue on me. No one has passed out and died. None of that crazy stuff. We just did a podcast, our last one with him about the BFR. I can send it to you. And you could get certified in it, and you could tell them how to go online and buy it, and they literally could learn, turn, screw it on. Attach it themselves, and then you could coach them in the sessions on how to do it, monitor the programs, and now you're getting even more bang for your buck in your virtual session because now they're doing what you're telling them to do plus BFR. And that's more than they were doing in the clinic they were at in the corner doing the ball squeezes and the butt squeezes and whatever else they were doing, you know? So there's a lot of avenues where you could keep taking your brand and building it with just these accessory things, you know?
Yeah, I think the cool intersection of where we are is technology meeting passion, meeting confidence, right? And all of those things happen, people get better outcomes. And like, yes, some of these additional tools are useful in some contexts. I understand your apprehension with isokinetic testing, but I'm not, as just as how the evidence is stacking up, I'm not ready to get rid of it yet. But for me, like, I think it's addition, not subtraction, right? So am I going to take that and say, just based on those numbers, ready to rock? Absolutely not. Like, all of that saying is to me is like, does the muscle have tissue capacity? And then hopefully see a reflection that it does. then okay, now we let's see how you move. And like without it, without some form of objective strength numbers, it just for me is like identifying where the weak point in the chain is. And that's why I like it. But like, I'm not dogmatic about anything. Like if evidence comes out that like, it's completely useless, like, okay, like whatever. I don't, you know, no sweat off my back. I just like to, for me, especially because I'm not there, right?
Yeah. Well, that's it too, right? Because you're not there with them, you need something to compare it to. So at least if you have numbers on a leg extension or a hamstring curl machine, you know, okay, well, they got to 120 pounds on a curl, right? So at least you know. Is that how you're doing it? Or are you having them put it at such a weight that they can't move it and you're just seeing like, so how are you doing the isokinetic testing that way?
Well, isokinetic testing is the big fancy machine. So they'd have to go to somewhere to do that.
Okay. Okay.
If there's somewhere that is like truly remote, meaning, you know, because I've had people like, they're like, I'm traveling to Madagascar. Can you help me out? I'm like, this is great. And stuff with stones. Like, I'm literally not kidding. But okay, maybe that's too much of an extreme example. But so if someone has access to somewhere where we can isolate a movement like a knee extension or a hamstring curl, I have them, depending where they are, because sometimes the tissues are a little bit easily irritated, I'll have them do a 5 rep max. I'll also have them do like as many reps as they can, single leg sit to stand. So like looking at like functional stuff too, not just the objective data, but a little bit talking circles here. But my point is, in order to meet our goal, which is reduce the risk of re-tear and create the most well-rounded athlete as possible, like I want to look at all of these things, because as we have kind of talked about before, I think there's this push from the parent and athlete side to get back to sports faster before they're ready.
100%.
My whole tagline is like, come back better. And to me, that means we're going to keep going and keep training until not only do you meet the tissue capacity guides or goals we're setting for you, you're also peak mental readiness. We're assessing that. You're also like, feeling stronger than you did before you were injured, before we even like attempt. So like, I think what I had said is like, I am very impressed by, I have been playing sports for 2 years and I have not gotten injured again, versus I pushed really hard and got back to sports in 3 months, which is still something I'm seeing. So this is what we're really trying to like flip the script on here. And like, part of that to me is having objective numbers so I can show them like, hey, you're not right. So like, whether that be whatever testing we do, plus having them do something that's relevant for their sport, whether it be like a T test or like a 5-10-5 40 yard dash, looking at some of those numbers to create a more comprehensive picture of like where they're at. That's kind of cool.
Well, I mean, it kind of ties into what, you know, I was going to ask the question like, and maybe this can, I ask both of you this, you know, what does the high quality care to an ACL athlete look like to you? Because we're talking about it, right? We constantly say like they should be doing this and this is the reason why. What does it look like to you? What does high quality care look like to you?
Okay, I guess I'll take this one first if you want to answer it too much.
Yeah, you're the guest. You're the guest.
Thank you. Ladies first, right? So,
yeah, of course,
it's such a hard thing to sum up in a way that's concise, but to me,
well, I mean, again, you've been doing a lot of that with what you're already saying, but maybe almost in like a bullet point now, like what does that kind of quality care look like to you?
Okay. To me, it looks like going by a criteria-based progression, meaning we only do what your body is ready for. Continuing, not only we build a very strong strength foundation and allow time to do training that focuses on building back lower extremity power in positions that are relevant for your sport. So depending on the person, that may look different, but having rate of force development be something we're focusing on. Then as we move into a more return to sport phase, it looks like continuing to get really effing strong, lifting weights, and slowly transitioning into elements of your sport in a way that's stepwise. So, like, there's no rush here. And even when you do return to sports, understanding that you're not done here, you're not done with your journey, and that you need to keep strengthening and working on those motor control, motor planning issues that may still be present. To me, comprehensive good care is very person-centered, and you actually get an opportunity to address the mental components of injury, whether that be, and not just through like outcome measures like the ACL, RSI, although like it is a useful, like actually talking through like, what do I have fear around? How can I address it? And having someone that helps you do that. I think if all of those things happen and we get some objective testing done, then that is what good care looks like to me.
Do you have
athletes fill out the TSK-11?
So I actually made my own questionnaire because it's based, it includes questions that are on the ACL RSI, and then I added additional questions to give me more clues about what they're scared about, or asking the questions redundantly so that they actually reveal the truth. Because everyone tends to be a liar when they know that it will get them back to sports faster.
Yeah.
Mike, I wanted, because we're actually going to do this in a two-part series here. Because we have so much that we're unpacking with Kate. We're going to get her back on as soon as we can get her back on, because we want to talk a lot more about the return to running, return to play, early sports specialization. But just to kind of finish it off and kind of bookend it here, I already know, but, you know, for everyone else out there, you know, what is high quality care to ACL athletes look like to you?
I think it's building them as a comprehensive individual, because the ACL injury is just one small example of something that's happened very common, but it's a bigger picture issue. You know, there's a lot of things that are very common in our society. It doesn't mean they're normal. And you could take a lot of things, from diabetes, hypertension, obesity, all that. You know, this is just, it's a ligament that's being blown out, but it's a bigger picture issue. So I think the comprehensive care is going to encompass a lot of the other things that the individual is coming in for that injury is going to leave basically as not only a better human being, but they're going to be a better athlete because of that, because they understood what got them hurt here, because those same limitations that cause the ACL to tear are things that are going to limit them in other areas of life. So everything you're teaching them here, they're coming out better. And that's like for all of our patients. This isn't just about exercise and orthopedics and all this other stuff. This is about getting you to own your lifestyle and optimizing your performance. I mean, that's kind of what we talk about here. That's what the whole like column core philosophy is, Joe, you know, teaching people to own it. You know, Bob says, you know, to some of the older people, he's like, there's no AARP discount on gravity. Like, you're losing the battle. Like, this is about life. And a lot of these kids coming in, they're tearing at as young as age 10 now, going all the way up, are learning a lot of things about life right now. So this physical therapy experience is more than just the ACL. It's really, so the comprehensive approach and all these things you're teaching them that entail will help them recover is, you know, the sleep education, the stress management education, the nutrition, you know, the strength physically and mentally, and just encompassing you on how to deal with adversity, and also just how to like take care of yourself. You know, you're learning discipline here, not only as an athlete, but as a human being. Like, you know, you got to wake up and do stuff. You brush your teeth, you take a shower, like you need to do stuff to maintenance your body. So it goes into everybody. So that's really what I say to a lot of our patients, like, and some of the older people come in the morning, they're like, oh, I can't do what these athletes do. I'm like, no one's asking you to do that. You know, their right. version of a squat is different than yours, and they're trying to optimize their function, you know? So I think that a quality care is really having somebody leave where they're learning how to just be better, and they're not going to need you to pick at them all the time. They're going to gain all this knowledge, and you're there just to help tune up or coach up, but they leave and they have it together. They have all these pieces on how to basically live as a human in today's society and an athlete, and not have to worry about constantly being re-injured and all this other stuff, you know, and fear. So that's what I think it comes down to. Well, whatever algorithm you use to get there in terms of exercise prescription and education and stuff, that's the biggest thing. They come out better than they were before, and they're not needing to have to come back.
I love
and
that.
You know what? I can, and I do too. And that's why I always let him kind of just go and finish off the podcast with something, you know, and bookend what we're talking about. I can say firsthand, I've seen the tone that he has set in that facility, from what we did together to what he's doing now. There's brochures, there's flyers, there's education all throughout that facility. You click on a QR code, it's going to talk about proper recovery nutrition or you know, any of our podcasts that we've done on sleep, anything that we've done, you know, on the BFR. It's all this information. When you walk into Mike's facility, all that information is available to you. And not only does he talk about it, but he you know, he is not just preaching it, he's doing it. He's doing an amazing stuff up there right now. This is going to continue as a part two, because again, we have so much to talk about. And we didn't even touch on this, the elephant in the room. Kate is obviously a female. Like, let's talk about the female athlete and all that in part two as well. So Kate, where can they find you?
The best place to find me is Instagram, Helios ACL Project. I'm on TikTok too, but apparently they're banning that, so who even knows? Find me on Instagram. It's the easiest place.
She's doing good. I tell you what, I watch a ton of the TikToks. They're amazing. You're doing great with that. So if you can convert that over to the Instagram, if something happens with TikTok, you know, whatever. But you're doing great. I love it. And you know, now that I probably liked a couple of those, you constantly come up on there.
I saw you on there. I was like, oh,
it's very valuable information. So I really love it. I love, you know, having people ask you questions and you're able to answer them, you know, firsthand like that. It's great stuff. Where can they find you?
Well, we just got our clinic Instagram up, so it's IVRehab_Warminster. So we'll have a lot of that on there. And I'm really big on LinkedIn. I don't know if you're on LinkedIn, Kate, but you'll see a lot of the stuff that I post on there. That's mostly really educational, clinical stuff. Network with a lot of surgeons on there. Pretty good stuff, too. And you can even see we brought a lot of them onto our podcast talking about some of the latest type of surgeries and things.
I've been watching.
Yeah.
I honestly found you through the Bear podcast.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Are we networked on LinkedIn?
I don't think I've logged into LinkedIn since 2015. But
you need to change that. Let's go.
You're going to change that. We'll have a talk off air, yeah. And it will change your life. It will change your life.
Yeah.
The stuff that Mike is putting up on there is so valuable. He's getting so much interaction from his peers, right? And so you want to really make a difference. You want to be acknowledged by your peers. And that LinkedIn is that spot right now. It's not like it used to be. You're not on there just looking for jobs. You know, it's providing some really valuable information, and you can probably repurpose a lot of what you did on TikTok and start putting them on LinkedIn in just a different form.
Dude, Dr. Pete puts up all of his stuff. He shows himself on LinkedIn in the back doing his gardening or whatever. Then he's also in the
he's pulling maple out of his trees. He's running.
He's a really cool guy. Yeah, he doesn't care. Yep. He just posts everything up.
Yeah, it's amazing. So, but we'll talk about some of that stuff off air. Everyone, stay tuned for part two. Yeah. It'll be coming soon. You guys have a great day. Thank you again for your time. Oh, wait. You can find me at Coach Haas anything. Just go to Coach Haas. Have a good day. I'll talk to you guys soon.
See you guys later. All right.